Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, this is Pia Barancini, and welcome to Everything is the Best, the podcast where I get vulnerable and make others do it with me. The goal here is to deep dive into interesting people's journeys, finding common denominators, and hopefully making you feel not so alone. So let's laugh, let's cry, and let's get inspired to live our best lives. For those who don't know, Heather McMahon is an actress, podcast host, and comedian, sparking all the joy for her followers on Instagram. Heather started posting videos of some of her characters and impressions years ago, but when Insta Stories came out and we got a glimpse of her everyday life, well, it was a wrap. We all fell in love. In today's podcast, it was important to me to really share her journey. So we talk about the odd jobs that paid her rent, including working at a sports bar in SoulCycle, how Insta Stories helped propel her career, and we bond over the shared loss of our fathers and importance of family. Stay tuned to the end of the podcast, where Davide and I once again answer your relationship questions. I was so gross last week. I wore the same sweatsuit set like 2 days in a row. And my poor husband, like, he works from home anyway. So he gets up and he takes a shower and he has his coffee and he gets dressed every day, even if he's not leaving the house. I got like so drunk one night. I was like, if you leave me, I get it.
Yeah, no, that's kind of how I am. But I looked at Jeff the other day. Jeff has worn the same, they're like basketball shorts and he doesn't fucking play basketball. So he's just been like, it's just like hot grundle sweat in his basketball shorts. His hair is so long and he doesn't have a good shaped head. He has like a really enormous head. And I just looked at him and I was like, I can't right now. He's like, I'll go shower. I was like, can we just like wash the basketball shorts? Like, I'm not asking for a lot, you know, and God bless him, but I can't.
I wish Davide would get gross with me because it would make me feel a little less gross. But he's very, like Monday's his laundry day, so he's doing his laundry downstairs. He has to make, the bed has to be made. He's very, when I met him, I was like, oh, you're full American Psycho.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. Italian style.
Yes, exactly. Okay.
It's creepy.
Are we doing your podcast or my podcast?
You pick. I don't care.
We'll do yours first.
Okay.
Okay.
Hi, Heather. Welcome to Everything is the Best.
Hey, girl. What's up?
So I actually want to know what you were like in high school.
Oh, what was I like in high school? Good question.
We start from the beginning here.
I love that. So I was student body president of my high school, but I went to the same school from kindergarten through 12th grade. So it was really just like, you know, I knew everyone. I was a theater kid, but I was cheerleader. Like I did all of the things.
You did all of it.
Yes. And I did student body president. I've always been a little bit of a politician. Like I could be on the forefront, you know, on stage, making people laugh, telling jokes, you know, hosting a pep rally, but don't ask me to like take a chemistry test. Like my SAT scores were so low that we barely broke 1,000. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay, so you and I were the exact same. You know who we are? We are Max Fisher from Rushmore.
Oh, 100%. Yes. Yes.
Bad grades, but did all the stuff.
But did all of the things. Like even went on a mission trip to Cozumel just because it sounded fun. You know what I mean? So was me.
So my experience is probably similar to yours, which is like, were your college counselors kind of like, what the fuck do you want to do with your life? Because it didn't matter really that you did all those things because you're
score stuck?
Well, so it was interesting. I only applied to one school. I thought I was going to go to Pepperdine in Malibu. And they even flew me out there. I did like a tour of the school. I was like, oh, this is it. I'm going to be a California beach babe. I'm going to do theater. Because I was
a
theater kid.
They flew you out?
Yeah. Well, like to audition theater for the school. And so I thought I was a shoo-in. I didn't apply to any other school. Turns out I didn't get in. I had a good GPA because I would give like Kevin Chang, who's our valedictorian, like a hand job for like help with homework. But when it came to like standardized testing, I mean, a cat with no eyes could have done a better job. So for me, that was a challenge. So I had like 2 weeks before graduation to figure out where I was going to go to school. I went to the guidance counselor. I was like, what am I going to do? And there was only two schools that still had rolling admission and that had good theater departments. And that was the University of Alabama and the University of Mississippi. I visited Alabama and there was a guy named, I swear to God, named Bubba. He was an 8th year senior and he did coke off a chicken tender. And I said, you know what? I don't think that this is the school for me. So I called my dad. I was like, you need to come get my ass. And then I said, well, I guess I'm going to go to Ole Miss. And I just showed up.
Which is one of the best schools ever, though, right?
Oh my God. University of Mississippi is truly like, when I die, spread my ashes in Mississippi. It's amazing. So I ended up going where I needed to go. But I remember sitting down with my college counselor going, what the fuck am I going to do? You know, Jeremy, you told me I was getting into Pepperdine. And he was like, honestly, I think you thrive at Ole Miss. Go for a semester. If you hate it, you can leave. And I went there and I was like, had the time of my life. So
I think it's so interesting. I talk to girls at my old high school all the time. And they're like type A psychos who are like, well, I have to go to Stanford. And if I don't, or, you know, whatever, right. Not even, but they just, and so I think it's so interesting to be able to like roll with the punches at that age because you think that the school you go to is going to be this like defining moment. And I think like that process ends up becoming the defining moment.
Absolutely. I mean, if anybody would have told me that I would have ended up in Mississippi, I would have been like, you're out of your fucking mind. There's no way. I would have bet all of my monies, literally all of the money.
Especially because you had California in mind and that's just a completely different experience.
Yes. And then I went to Mississippi. I was like, oh, I'll just go here for a semester. I ended up joining a great sorority. I had the time of my life. They had to literally drag me off that campus. And so for me, and now I get to go back. I just did a show there in the fall and I went back and I just spoke at a women's conference in Mississippi in February. And I'm like, everything was meant to happen. And the irony of it is my best friend at Ole Miss was this girl from New York who kind of was in the same situation as me. She didn't get into Michigan for her top musical theater school. She ended up rolling the dice and being like, fuck it, let's go to a fun SEC school. She is actually how I met my fiance, Jeff. I would have never met him. I was going to go to New York after college, but I met him through her because, you know, they were both from New York. So it was completely meant to be.
Isn't that nice?
I love it though that you went to that same school that like everybody thought they were going to Stanford. That was my school. Everyone was like, you didn't apply to 6 Ivy Leagues. I'm like, no, I stay in my lane. Yeah.
I applied to 21 colleges because I just like sent the general admission fucking application to like everyone. It was like $20 a pop. And my dad was like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, I don't know what my future is. Is that alcohol or water?
Water. I'm so Southern. I'm drinking water out of a mason jar. I will drink a glass of wine in about 20, you know?
I made a backup cocktail in case you were drinking, just in case.
I love that.
There is a 3-hour time difference, but so you obviously then were in the theater program. Did you like the theater program?
No, the theater program was bullshit. It was one of those like very, you know, all the college professors were actors who I guess didn't act. It was just a very bitter, it was a great program, but it's funny. They really fucked me over. So I say to this day, like, I want to go back. I want to be very successful and then go back and donate a bunch of money to the school and rename and, like, the theater building. Yeah, I want to name the theater building the Heather McMahon Performing Arts Center and just tell them to go fuck themselves.
Hi, I'm Shanae Alexander, host of Press Send, a podcast and, more importantly, a safe and hilarious place for candid conversations about the scary, funny, heartbreaking, but always intriguing questions that make us all human. Each week, me and a new best friend you haven't met yet field your questions across any and all topics and offer our take on the matter. With plenty of humor, heart, and badassery along the way, we launch a new episode of Press Send every Wednesday. We'll see you there.
Did you want to be an actress or did you always want to be a comedian?
Well, I mean, I was a classically trained actor. I did competition plays and competition theater in high school. Shout out to all my, you know, theater nerds. But I mean, I would always say comedy. So I did comedy at my prom, stand-up comedy at my prom. And I roasted.
No.
Yes. So I roasted the senior class my junior year and it was a total surprise. And that was my first real stand-up gig. And I said, okay, if I can roast my peers and make them laugh, then this is what I was meant to do.
How did you even pull that off? Was this your idea?
No. So because I went to this like really bougie, over the top religious Christian school. We didn't call it prom. We called it like a junior senior banquet. So every year the dance had to be hosted by the parents outside the school because, you know, like, you know, as Christians, we can't bump and grind next to each other because everyone will get pregnant. So,
oh my God.
So prom wasn't a normal thing. So they had this big banquet and then they always had like a surprise guest or surprise entertainer. And so they were like, you should
it
roast.
Was you.
It was me. It was honestly very bold for the school I was at. It was very bold. Like I roasted. But,
so people. You've been this charismatic since you were like un bebé.
Yeah. Yeah, truly. I mean, listen, if I wasn't doing theater and comedy, I'd be in sales. You know, I'd be selling Viagra in doctor's offices somewhere with a low cut top on and my tits to my throat. Like that's just, it's all some form of entertainment, you know?
Absolutely. So what did you do after Ole Miss?
After Ole Miss, I moved to New York because I knew I wanted to do the Upright Citizens Brigade program, which is, there's one in LA, there's one in New York. And so I moved to New York and was doing comedy and improv and sketch and stand up and just kind of was doing the grind. But it was interesting because when I moved to New York in the comedy scene, especially back then, it's like, it was very interesting because, you know, you said,
what year is this?
This is 2009. So it's all these like cool creative writers who went to Brown and Harvard and Dartmouth. And I was like, I went to Ole Miss and I wear a full face of makeup and hoops. So a lot of these other comedy guys were like, we don't know where the fuck she came from. So I, you know, I just kind of did my thing and I honestly had the time of my life. And then eventually I left New York and went to LA.
What neighborhood did you move in to in New York?
I lived in Chelsea. It was Chelsea. It's that area is now cool, but I lived right across from Madison Square Garden. So literally, but I moved at the top of the recession. So I got this beautiful like luxury building for literally pennies on the dollar. But every morning I would wake up and stare at like MSG, like it was right there. So the neighborhood was hot dumpster fire trash, but I learned a lot of life New York lessons living like across from Penn Station. You know?
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like energetically, that's insane to be around that many people. Because I lived like, I lived in the East Village or like way Lower East Side, like 7th and D, like totally neighborhoody. But like having that many people in front of your building must have been fucking crazy. Also probably really good for comedy.
Oh, it was insane. So one day it was a Britney Spears, her circus tour. I was at MSG and I was walking outside my building and there was an envelope and I found two first like front row tickets. And so I'm looking around going, this has to be like a prank. I'm being punked. This is
on the ground.
Camera. On the ground. I took one of my gay besties. We went, had the fucking time of our lives. It was shit like that where I always got to go to like concerts and like people would be outside and be like, here, you want some hockey tickets? Let's go. And I'd be in a box. Like, so I just kind of thrived.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But it wasn't a neighborhood. And then I lived in Hell's Kitchen with all my boys because, you know, I was doing the Broadway and all that. So I was always a West Sider. And now I live in the East Village, like Gramercy area. So now I moved to East.
Which is so nice.
Yeah.
And then what made you move to LA? You just wanted to pursue more comedy here. Like, what was that moment of you saying like, okay, I'm done here. Like, what were the steps you were doing in New York and the things you were doing that eventually made you think you had to leave?
It was interesting. I'd actually just met Jeff. We were in like our first year of being madly in love. And I went out to visit a friend who was working on a TV show called Community. And I went out there and I was like, this is where I need to be. Well, one, it's like 75 degrees and you know, everyone's a ding dong and ridiculous. And I was like, I need to be in this. And I went back and I'll never forget. I took Jeff to dinner and I was like, I think I need to move to LA. And he started hysterically crying at dinner. And he was like, I knew this was going to happen. I didn't want you to go to California. So we were
like, he's like so new. Like, where did he grow up?
He grew up in Westchester though. You know, Westchester is the best Chester, like, Scarsdale kid. So, and I lived in LA for 4 or 5 years and I loved it. And I went back and forth between New York and LA. There's something about,
he stayed in New York.
He stayed in New York. Yeah.
That whole time.
We've been long distance. This is our 10th year together. We were long distance 9 out of 10 years. Or no, 8 out of 10 years. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
How often would you go back to New York?
I mean, like once a month and we would just fly back and forth. It's not ideal.
And what? No, but you can make it work. Actually, I get asked a lot from girls because I'm really vocal about obviously my relationship and we were long distance for the first 2.5 years of our life. Yeah. So like, what are your tips to keep your relationship thriving?
You know, it's all about communication. It's crazy. Like I'm on the road now. I tour as a comic and I'm always, I been touring all last year. And every time I come home, I still like Jeff. So it's very interesting. Like, we live together in New York now, and I'm like, I still enjoy him. We've been locked up in this quarantine. I'm like, I look at him on the couch. I'm like, you need to stop. I just can't. You know what I mean? I always found I'm not a creature of habit. I need something new every day. So for me, it still made me want, I missed him. And I think it kept the spark alive. And then, you know, I'd see him every 3 weeks. We'd have great sex and I wouldn't have to clean up after him. And then I'd send his ass back home. I'm like, go make money, better yourself.
I think it's the best way to start a relationship, to be honest with you. Yeah. I think when girls get really nervous about that, I'm like, you're going to be communicating more than you ever would be with him if you guys were sitting next to each other on a couch.
Right.
You appreciate the time that you have together and all the annoying shit doesn't pop up. And then by the time it does, you're kind of like, I got to go now.
Right. Yeah, I found it really worked. And it's interesting when Jeff and I, people have been messaging me saying like, are you guys good in quarantine? Y'all have never been together in the same space this long. But, you know, and he's also my total opposite, which I think works. I need somebody who's grounded, who's focused, who's a Virgo. He gets a boner to make like an Excel spreadsheet or to do any sort of financial conversation where I just start sweating. I'm like, I can't. He's like, it's honestly and truly date night to him is sitting down and going over finances and like pulling up a PowerPoint. And I'm like, this is not foreplay. Did you order me pizza? Okay, now I'll have sex with you. Like, that's truly our relationship.
Yeah, which is great. You need that.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody does. Mm-hmm. When did you know he was the one?
The moment he walked into the bar. The night I met him.
What bar?
It's actually a gay bar in Hell's Kitchen called Valhalla. So Jeff has, his best friend, who's his cousin, has two brothers who I was really close with. The oldest and the youngest are both gay. And they were like, you know, going out. And so Keith and Jeff, I think they come from like a Rangers game or something. Like, let's go meet up with, you know, Heather and all of our friends. And so we were at this like beer bar called Valhalla in Hell's Kitchen. And Jeff walked into the bar and I said out loud, I go, oh my God, I'm going to marry him. And my girlfriend, Christine, was like, my friend, Jeff? I was like, I'm going to marry him. And when I look back on that night, he was really pale, like so pale, he was almost jaundiced and he had no hair. He's since grown hair because I think he got on hair pills, but he was like sort of balding and looked very sickly. But in that moment, I was like, that's who I'm going to marry. And so we started, we became friends that night and started dating like 2 or 3 months after. Yeah, I knew.
I love that.
I knew.
So what were you doing in New York at that time? You know, okay, you graduated school, you moved to New York. What were you doing like for work? Like you were doing lots of stuff, but like what was actually paying your bills at that time?
Oh girl, let me tell you what. I worked at Stout, which is the biggest Irish sports bar on 33rd between 6th and 7th. So in the heart
of— Oh my God, I know that bar. I worked at a sports bar too, but one on Houston.
Yes, I love it. So I worked at that bar.
Character building.
Yeah, I would make so much money.
I'd have to
wear stockings and these like skirts and this like oversized black button down. It wasn't a good look, but I'd never been more in shape in my life because I'd carry like 55 beers on a tray. And whatever was happening at Madison Square Garden that night, we would deal with the crowd beforehand. We get like a pop and then afterwards we get a pop. So I'll never forget one night, it was a Metallica concert and we were playing on the big screens and we have like thousands of Metallica fans in there and they're so nice. But all of a sudden, like the record that we're playing starts skipping and one of the Metallica fans is like, what's going on? And I grab my manager by the throat and I go, you better fucking fix this or we're all gonna die. It was like that kind of shit. And that was the best, like literally bartending, waiting tables in New York. I think everybody should have to work in the restaurant biz for at least a year. I think it makes you who you are. It teaches you about people. It teaches you about culture. It teaches you about work ethic. That changed my life.
That's been the biggest common denominator of me doing any podcast I've done is that everyone has said at some point you have to work in the service industry.
Yeah.
And you to learn how to read people, to learn how to be, you know, get treated like shit. You can't snap back.
Right.
You got to stay like focused and humble and get your job done. And you know right away when you like say hello to your new table, like how you need to act with them. Like right. I loved being able to read people and figure that out and be like, oh, you don't want me to talk to you. Like, I'm going to be cool.
Right.
Or like, you want me to entertain you. Okay, that's great. You know what I mean? Or like, you're a cute couple. I'm going to break the ice for you.
Right.
First date, huh? Wine, you know, like those kinds of things. What restaurant did you work at?
I worked at this restaurant called Stecchino and it was actually up in Hell's Kitchen. It was like this like Italian wine bar, which has now been, it's closed down, which is unfortunate, but it's now turned into just BJ's burger joint and they're in Hell's Kitchen. I'm like, I don't know if I would call it BJ's joint, but, and then I worked at this other place elsewhere. I got into more like fine dining and then La Bernadette tried to recruit me. They're like, how quickly can you learn French? You're a great bartender. I was like, I don't want to be in this industry. And that's when I was like, I need to move to LA. I need to get hyper-focused. focus. Because when you start making money in the restaurant biz, like when you're like 23 and you're coming home with like $1,000 of cash every night, you're like,
yeah,
I don't want to follow my dreams. I just want to
absolutely
make money. So I was living the good life. And then I went to LA and I thought I would get, you know, I had all these amazing recs from New York and I thought I'd be able to get a good job. And then I could not get a job in LA to save my fucking life. Because I wasn't.
For how long?
Oh, like 6 months, because I wasn't a porn star. I'll never forget, you know, Laurel Hardware in West Hollywood?
Oh, yeah.
I showed up for a bartender interview and nobody there had a bra on. And I said, hey, I'm so sorry. Like, I should have been like a cute outfit, but what I thought was like appropriate. And I realized I didn't have a sleeve tats. I didn't have fake titties. And I was wearing a bra. So I was like, I'm out. And I could not get a bar job. And
LA is so gross that way.
Yeah. And I was like, you don't want to look at my resume? And they're like, no. How much cocaine do you do? Like, none at the moment because I'm broke. But yeah, so I got a job at a gym. The irony of that. Uh-huh.
What gym?
I worked at SoulCycle in West Hollywood.
Doing what?
I was a front desk
girl. Checking people in?
Oh, yeah. And then I was like basically in charge of dealing with all the crazy celebrities because I was the only one who was like, you know, could have a, I guess, meaningful conversation with like one of the Spice Girls. And that was my job. I mean, you want to talk about hot goss. Working at SoulCycle was wild.
Well, that was one of the first ones that was like David Beckham, Beyonce, Jay-Z.
You name them. I've met them and, you know, wiped their faces down of sweat and given them a water bottle. I've done it.
I would like one story.
Victoria Beckham, who... Spice Girls was my first concert in the fourth grade. Of course. The biggest Spice Girls fan, couldn't give a fuck about NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. So when my first day on the job, Scary Spice and Posh Spice, so Melanie B and Victoria came in and my boss pulled me aside and she's like, hey, they don't like each other. You need to make sure that they don't see each other in class. So bring Victoria around this side and then bring Mel B around that side. That's like if you're a Beatles fan finding out that Paul McCartney and Ringo hate each other. Like I literally went in the back and wept for 15 minutes by myself because I couldn't collect the fact that my childhood had just been shattered. All my dreams.
That is so shit bitchy.
I know.
And they're at the same, they can't even be cool at SoulCycle.
No. And if they saw each other, they were kind of catty. And then one day Victoria came up to me and she's like, Heather, I have a question. I want to buy my friend a shirt. What size are you? Like a large, extra large? I was like, yes, Victoria, I am an extra large. She's like, all right, thought so. So I want to buy my girlfriend a shirt for back home, but I don't, she's a large, your size, but I don't want her to think that I think she's large. What would you do? And I said, honestly, Victoria, I would just buy her the size that fits her. I wouldn't be offended if somebody bought me my size. All right, think about it. She goes into class, takes the class, comes out and she goes, all right, thought about it. I'm going to buy a medium and buy a large. And then I'm going to get my seamstress to switch the tags in it. So she thinks she's wearing a medium, but in fact, she's wearing a large. What do you think? And this is in front of everybody. And I just took a second. And I said, you know what, Victoria? I said, if my friends cared enough about me to switch the tags in my clothes, they'd be real fucking friends. I said, go for it. And I was like, what else are you going to say in that moment? You know?
I have so many stories through my lifetime of people saying horribly offensive things to me about my weight that they thought were like them just broing with me.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Well, because you're in fashion. Like, I can only imagine what
you're doing.
Oh, God.
And I was like, oh, my God. In New York.
Yeah.
So I was just, every job I had, I was like skinny when I moved there. Not skinny. Well, I was skinnier because I was on Adderall through high school.
Right.
And then I went like off my Adderall and turned into like a normal person. And oh yeah, it was always like, I'd be, you know, work. Oh my God. Whatever company I was working for. PB, Pia. Yeah. This came in way too large. Can you try it on? We're going to spec it for a large or an extra large in front of the whole office. Yeah. I'd be like, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you just go, okay, fantastic. Well, I mean, for me as an actor, like I've always, right now I'm the heaviest I've ever been. And I don't know if I'm hormonal, like what the fuck's going on? But I've always been like, even at my best, I'm like a 10, 12, right? But right now I'm like busting out of a 14, but I still have like a good face. So it works. And it's so funny being in the entertainment industry, like the auditions that I've gone on have been so brutal. I auditioned for a show, which is a very famous show on television. I won't say what it is because I don't want to throw shade at the show.
Yeah,
but
we don't need to.
The role that I auditioned for said in the breakdown, morbidly obese, but beautiful. And I had to go in and read. And in my scene, I had to eat ice cream. And I was like sitting in a tub eating ice cream for the audition. I had to like pretend this. But I was like, morbidly obese? morbidly, this is in the breakdown. Like, I get it. She's a big girl, but morbidly obese, but has a good face. And my agent was like, just go. You might book this. Just go.
Oh my God.
Did not get the job. But if I let every single like breakdown or, you know, opportunity that I've had, because in our industry it is strictly based on like mad specifics.
Of course, yes.
But that's been my whole life. They're like, she's really overweight, hates her dad, but loves herself. Go in. It's your time.
Oh,
I'm like,
God.
All right, let's do it. You know,
what was the process of getting an agent like when you were in LA?
So it was interesting. I didn't have representation when I was in LA. I was one of the early Instagrammers in the sense that I would just put up stuff that made me laugh and then it kind of took off. I will tell you this. I made more connections working at SoulCycle. I was strategic in working there because I knew I'd be running into like famous people all the time and they'd need me for something. Because if anybody knows, it was so hard to get into SoulCycle classes at like the peak of SoulCycle. So I had all these people's numbers. So they would text me in the middle of the night like, hey, can you get me to the 6 a.m. class? I'm like, yes, I can get you, you know, head producer of Fox. So
absolutely.
I knew how to like work the system, and it actually wasn't until I left LA. So my dad passed, it'll be 5 years at Christmas. My dad passed and I kind of picked up my life and moved home to Atlanta. And by then I had built up the momentum with basically meeting enough famous people that they all started following me on Instagram. So then when I got to Atlanta and my Instagram really took off, it was the wildest thing. I didn't think I'd have to like go home for shit to really pop off. But that's when I moved back to Atlanta, that's when all the agents from LA were like, hey, we'd like to rep you. So it's, you know, it's like a catch 22. I thought when I was out there, nothing was happening. And then once I left LA, they were like, oh, we need you back. So, you know, that's just how it rolls.
I think it's always those jobs that you fucking like hate, or like these like random middle ground jobs
right.
that for some reason, like I interviewed Benny Drama the other day and he said his first job he hated more than anything in New York, but it taught him how to edit. And like, that's when he started making videos for his Instagram.
Yes. It's, yeah.
You have to take those shitty jobs because you never know. Oh my God. I worked as a hostess at Strip House, a steak restaurant in Union Square, and met Nas one time. And I remember him hooking me up with someone like his, he was like, oh, I like your, whatever. Long story. He ended up like hooking me up with someone who was like a stylist. And I like interned for them for a while. You never fucking know.
Yeah. You really never know. And I think people always joke, they're like, why'd you wear a gym? I was like, cause I knew that that's where desperate people in LA who were all like in like all these like famous, like power players went there for validation. Mm-hmm. So let me be the person who validates you. So then you remember, I like her. I got to bring her in for something. Like I knew exactly what I was doing.
I think that's always the thing, is that you have to be like never being scared of being vocal or showing your personality, or, you know, it's like there's no room. I mean, unless it's like you're going to fucking die because it's so painful, but there isn't really any fucking room to be like shy nowadays because you never really know what that's going to lead to.
So true. And it got to the point where, you know, I would wear a headset and go into like the really popular classes and I would basically do like stand up on the mic. While
you were like emceeing?
Yes, I was
the
emceeing.
Fucking-
I would warm up the class. There's a famous instructor, Angela, and her class always had like everybody famous.
This.
So I would come in with a headset on and like warm up the crowd basically. So all these people just knew I was ridiculous. And then they were like, you're funny. What do you want to do? And then it sparked the conversation. I'm like, oh, I'm a comedian. And then I'll never forget. I had business cards in Whitney Cummings bought like a sweatshirt and shoes. And I put my business card in her bag. And I was like, hey,
sick.
And I wrote on it, like, if you ever need an intern or can I be your writer's assistant? She never called me, but it was interesting. We're both headlining the Nashville Comedy Festival. Well, we were supposed to. It was supposed to be this week, but it got rescheduled for September. But yeah, so it's just very interesting how things
are. You
full
friends
circle.
Now? Did you say anything to her? Like, remember?
No, she has no. She has no idea who I am. But my plan was I was going to go up to her at the Comedy Festival and be like, "Hey, I begged you for a job when I worked at SoulCycle, but I don't need you anymore." Like, I have no ill will. She's fantastic. I love her. But that's just like the little sneaky things I would do was I would just hustle. I was not afraid to ask anybody for or tell anybody what I was doing.
Yeah. Oh my God. That is so funny.
Yeah.
So how is it being in quarantine with Hefe?
It's fine. You know, he's chill. So we came down to Atlanta. I mean, we've been here, what, like over a month? We got out of New York just because I looked at him and I said, I can't be in an apartment in New York City with you. So we came down to my mom's place. She's got a lot of space here in Atlanta. And he...
My dream, by the way, Atlanta is one of my favorite fucking places in the world.
It's amazing.
I would live there in a heartbeat.
I never really...
Claremont Lounge.
Oh, yes.
Whole thing. Give it all to me.
And if people don't know about the Claremont Lounge, it's basically where strippers go to die in the best way. It's like older strippers, pregnant strippers, no teeth strippers. It's just anything you can imagine. They're very body positive. They're very inclusive. So it's just a positive place.
When I had a blog in 2000, between like 2005 and 2009, I used to take portraits of people and like write about them. And yes. I'm one of the only people that was allowed to photograph the strippers at the Claremont Lounge. And the photos are insane.
Oh my God.
And they're insane. How- and I spent like a whole afternoon in there.
How do we get a hold of these photos?
I have them. They're on my computer. They're these like old film photos. I mean, they're beautiful photos. They're insane. But I went, I knew I was like visiting a friend there who had to work. And so everyone had told me that it was amazing. And I knew that if I went at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, that would be when it would be like extra grimy.
Yeah.
And so I went and like ordered a drink and ended up like hanging out with this really cool security guard.
Yeah.
And I was like, I have my camera with me. And I know, and I like showed him my blog and he was like, he's like, yeah. He's like, will you take photos of me too? So I took like photos of like all his old like stick and poke tattoos that he loved. And then he let me take photos of all the girls. It was insane. The conversations they were having with me were fucking insane. And but they were also proud. It was like a very odd, it was crazy. Like one of them in the mid-conversation got up to like give this like old dude a blowjob. She's like, I gotta go to this guy a blowjob. I'll be right back. And she was like missing teeth.
Yeah.
It was fucking nuts.
And it's like very, it's just like a classic staple. And now they've redone it where they'll always keep, so the Claremont Lounge is the basement titty bar. And then mm-hmm. you've got, they put a really, they redid the hotel on top of it. And they've got like this awesome restaurant, Tiny Lou's. They got a rooftop. So they zhuzhed it up. But they're like, we will never lose the integrity of what's in the basement. And I mean, everybody who comes to Atlanta, like all my agents, when they came for my show in Atlanta, I was like, we're going to the Claremont Lounge. I don't care if some of y'all are sober, drink a Coke. You got to come see this.
What time do bars close in Atlanta?
2:30 legally, but really like 4. You know, it's a South. You can sweet talk a cop. They don't care.
Do you like growing up there?
I loved it. I grew up a little bit outside the suburb. I mean, you're in like Pasadena, right?
Same thing.
Yeah. So I grew up in like a great, wonderful, loving, beautiful suburb next to a golf course. But I mean, I'm born and raised Atlanta till I die. And it's interesting. I'm in New York now and I Jeff and I think have had that aha moment coming back down here during this whole thing where it's like, I just want to be back in the South. I want to be close to family. There's something very magical about having a little land, having a little space, going outside, putting your feet in some damn grass.
That's why we moved here.
Yeah.
My best friend from high school moved to Atlanta.
Yeah.
She was like from there as a kid, moved here, went to high school here. And then her mom moved back and she moved back with her husband and now they have kids in Atlanta and she's like living her best fucking life there. By the way, everyone in the world, there are many places outside of New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco and they're cheap and they're full of lovely people.
Yes. I say this, never been to Atlanta. Atlanta has one of the best food scenes in the country. It's got like the food scene mm-hmm. of LA and New York. It has entertainment and it's basically a mini Hollywood because everything shoots here in Georgia because of the great tax incentive. So like if you're, mm-hmm. I watch Ozarks, one of my favorite shows, all shot literally around the corner from my mom's neighborhood. So it's just interesting. My, like in a perfect world, I can move back to Atlanta, shoot my own TV show here, you know, hire all my friends to run shit, run a production company and then, you know, live my best life and have some sort of sense of like normalcy. Oh God,
that'll happen. Would be yeah. also fucking cool is if you could open up like a bar in Atlanta that was like a comedy bar.
Oh, hell yeah. And just call it like McChuckles. And we serve PBR. You can smoke inside. And we serve
chicken
dinners.
Like every comedian a chance.
Yeah.
To like have a place to do stand up.
Yeah. I'm about that.
PBR.
I love that. Well, you know what's funny? And you'll appreciate this. They tried to open a Soho house here or it's like we are getting a...
No, they did not.
Yeah, well, we were getting a Soho house, but like a house... We're a Soho house without a house. And I'm like, y'all should just open one here. But then they were like, well, everyone goes to their country clubs. I was like, that's a really good point. You know, like nobody in Atlanta, everyone in Atlanta would be like, whoa, you want me to join your Hollywood club? Like we're getting a Nobu. And everyone in my mom's country club was like, oh, God damn. Oh, we're going to Nobu because they think we don't know, understand what sushi is. Honey, we got Umi. Umi's the most expensive sushi in the Southeast. We don't need your goddamn Nobu. Like that's the kind of shit. That's what I need to be around, you know, just salt of the earth.
If I hadn't married the Italian, I was going like, cause we were off and on for a while. Mm-hmm. I was hitting up all my old friends who were Southern. And I was like, it's either him or I'm going full Italian.
Yeah.
I mean, full Southern. I want like a cowboy. I want land. I want a Southern accent. I want a grandma. I want the whole package deal.
Well, it's funny saying, now your Italian's like fresh from Italy. Mine's like New York Italian. His grandparents are first generation. But like last night we had a tornado warning. It was really bad thunderstorms. And Jeff could not sleep. He was up till 4 o'clock in the morning watching the radars. He's like, Heather, I don't understand what the damn, like, what is the difference between a warning and a watch? Like, I'm freaking the fuck out. I was like, honey, we've done tornado drills. Trust me. When I hear the siren from the golf course, I'll let you know if we need to get in the basement.
So, oh my God. It's God, that's funny. So fucking scary.
It is scary, but it's funny watching him adjust because he's so New York, but he's really truly a Southerner at heart. He wants to do is golf the rest of his life. So I'm like, live your truth. Let's live in Atlanta on a golf course.
Yeah.
Live your life.
Why not? Was your daddy funny?
So funny. My dad was a really big business guy. And when he sold his company, he started doing like motivational speaking and so it all makes sense. Like, I am my father's daughter.
We've never talked about this, but like, so am I, and I really recognize people with that. And especially when I was seeing, like, your mom is like some cute little like frail, like that's how my mom is.
Yeah.
I was like, all this doesn't come from that woman.
Right.
Like, it comes from like a big man.
Oh, 100%. To the point where like my dad even was like, Heather, I hate to tell you, but you took after my figure, babe. You know what I mean? He's like, you got a thick back. You got a thick back. I'm like, I do, Dad. I do. I have a very thick back, thick neck, thin ankles. That's what's up. I mean, I am.
You have great daughter. Legs, Heather, by the way.
Thank you. Thin ankles.
You have a beautiful fucking butt.
Thanks. Thank you.
You're always talking about making fun of yourself, but your body is beauty. And that whole fucking trip you were in Asia, every outfit was fabulous. Your bathing suit, the whole thing.
Oh my God, you're a dream. You know what it is? I'm just very top heavy. So when you have big boobs and a broad back, it's so hard to find clothes that fit. Because, and I mean, listen, you can tell me from the fashion standpoint, I basically need to have my own line because I'm like a bigger size, but I'm smaller on the bottom. So I basically need things three sizes bigger in the chest and shoulders and then bring it in at the waist. And I can't
ever. How big are your boobs, double Ds?
38 double D. So I'm broad.
Yeah.
I mean, I got the shoulders of an offensive lineman, an Olympic swimmer, but then I got the legs of like a chicken tender. Like, I can't even describe how tiny my ankles are.
Your ankles are, you have like Meghan Markle ankles.
Literally.
They're so tiny.
They will snap at any moment. it's funny. Jeff is top heavy too. He's super broad. He's got the biggest neck. I got some custom clothes made in Thailand when I was there. And the guy who was measuring my shoulders, he said, you have the broadest shoulders on any woman I've ever measured in the history of clothing making. And I looked at my best friend Chris, I go, did you hear that? Put that on my tombstone. Like, yes.
He really had to drive the point home.
He really did.
In the history of making any clothes since ever. The dawn of time.
He said, on a woman, you have the biggest shoulders. I was like, thank you. I will take that with me back to the States.
Mm-hmm. Your episode where you and Jeff were talking about going into Brunello Cucinelli and how they like laughed at him is so funny to me because Davide worked there forever. And when he would go to the headquarters, which was often like he was involved in a lot of the stuff there, but he was the big guy there.
Right.
He was like big for them and they would put like the bigger sizes on him. And my dad was an offensive lineman. Like, he was an actual football player for the Minnesota Vikings. Like, he was like a beast. And so here he's always like, I know I'm not tall. And like, I know that I'm little. And it's so funny because he grew up being like so big over there. But we're just like bigger people over here, man. Like, I think there's hormones and shit in our fucking meat.
Oh, without a doubt.
That in Italy.
But mine is so genetics to the point where, I mean, my weight fluctuates. You know, when you're a bigger girl, you're a bigger girl. And I love my body and I'm very body positive. But it's funny, my sister and my mom are both like brittle, like bird bones. My mom is
a bird with bird. Paper.
Yeah, exactly. My sister's the same way. She's like a double zero petite. And that's like her on a bloated day. She's like, I can't, it's really hard for me to put on weight.
That's so annoying.
I'm like, you dumb bitch.
We were all bigger. Like, my sister was big. So she was like always struggled and she's really tall and so muscular because if she had to like turn, that would drive me fucking crazy if I had a sister who got my mom's genes.
Yeah. And so it was always just the joke. Like, if you needed to move a baby grand piano from the dining room to the living room, who did it? I did it. I was just a workhorse. I just move shit. I grill things. I was the son family never had.
It makes you funny.
It does.
I was always like, I gained so much weight in high school because I got my period when I was 10 and I stopped growing.
Yeah.
And I was like 165 in high school.
Right. And you're like 14.
I was 14 and that was so, and all my friends were like so tall and skinny. skinny. And then we had to like, we all joined track to like get out of PE. And like, they put me in fucking shot put because I couldn't run fast
right.
enough.
I would have been right there with you.
You would have, and I was so, and they were just make fun of me as they like flitted by on the fucking, but I just had to like make jokes about myself all the time. And it really makes you have to like come outside of yourself and be like, okay, it's fucking not that serious. All of you freaking actually huge fucking assholes. And like, I'm just going to laugh this off. And none of you have half the personality that I have anyway. So whatever.
Exactly. It's funny though. Nowadays, like I'll never forget. I had a therapist one time. I was like, are you laughing and doing comedy to hide the pain? I was like, no, there's no fucking pain.
No.
This is just real life. Like, and it's interesting that we live in a space now where some people are even like, you can't make jokes about yourself. I'm like, this is my body. I respect my body. I love my body. I'm the only one who's allowed to talk about my body. If you talk about it, we have problems. But if I want to get up there and talk about what it's like to bust yeah. out of a sweater because your shoulder blades cut through it because you're so broad, that's my story. You know what I mean? That's my truth.
What are you doing now to deal with people's fucking overly annoying, like political correctness? Because sometimes there are times where you say shit on your stories where I'm like, because people are up my ass if I blink wrong. So I'm wondering like how...
They're up your ass
because you're a lot of negative feedback.
They're up your ass because you're in fashion. You know what I mean? And I know yeah. you as like so fucking down to earth and funny and relatable and real. But it's funny. I've noticed because I have a couple other friends who are in the fashion world and they get that. It's like you seem like a cool girl, but you're so down to earth. You're like a cool, nice girl. You know what I'm saying? So I think you'll probably get shit because girls are like, oh, well, she means it some other way. But in reality, everybody knows you're just a down ass bitch. I know, I say things, I don't know. I just kind of don't apologize anymore. My whole job is to take things that make us awkward and uncomfortable and things that we don't understand and to find common ground and bring humor around it so that we can all connect. Right. So if I can't mm-hmm. do my job, like one lady was like, you can't use the word prostitute. They're sex workers. I was like, I'm going to use the word prostitute till I fucking die. Okay, bitch. I'm not saying sex worker. It's not happening. Sorry about it. You know,
oh my God.
A hand job's a hand job. Let's be honest.
What's the first video you did that got like, that went viral?
So
was there like that aha moment with a video?
Well, I was really well known in the beginning for my characters. A lot like what Benny Drama does. Benny's a friend of mine. I used to do characters and I still do them every now and then. But that's what really, I got like a cult following for that. And then once Instagram stories came around, I started kind of like living my life authentically by just doing stories and telling like my day-to-day shit. And then I noticed that the engagement through that was insane. People were like, Heather, we want to see what you're getting into. We love you in mm-hmm. a wig, but we also just want to hear from you. So then I started shifting back towards just my stand-up. And, I did a Britney 911 thing about 2 years ago and that kind of took off.
I remember that.
I was like hungover one day and I was just like, are we ever going to acknowledge the fact that yeah, what Britney's doing on Instagram is not necessarily, I don't know, je ne sais quoi, the healthiest thing? Like, are we going to acknowledge it? And then it just fucking took off. And people, I probably got like, no lie, 6,000 DMs, people saying, Heather, I've been holding this inside. I talked to my therapist about this. Like, I have a friendship group and we're very concerned about Britney. And then it just kind of took off. Yeah.
That was really, it's when I died. But when I really died for you was when, what was it? Fucking Lululemon invited you on that like yoga retreat.
Jesus Christ. I talk about this in my stand-up. I went on a Lululemon retreat. First of all, Lululemon doesn't make my size. So I get to this retreat and it's all professional athletes and like yoga models. And I'm literally wearing my outfits from Old Navy because they carry my size. I'm like, I'm like, the largest bra you have here is a large. I've got double D. So I was at a Lululemon retreat wearing no Lululemon. Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's unbelievable that they did that to you.
Yeah. I mean, it was great. And trust me, I met some of my best friends and I had such a good time, but it was just funny. I'm like, why am I at some like influencer yoga retreat? I'm not an influencer and I'm sort of athletic and I can't fit in the clothes. So somebody riddled me this. Yeah.
It was when you like escaped and got chips and like the whole like wellness update. It was like, I couldn't even deal. It was so funny.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to wrap this up with one final question.
Yes.
Which we ask everyone. Oh, actually, I'm going to ask you the two questions. What is your morning routine?
My morning routine when I'm on the road is get up, sweat, panic, figure out which city I'm in, figure out what airplane I'm supposed to get on to the next city. And a lot of like cortisol through the roof. That's usually my touring morning. My morning when I'm home, get up, make a cappuccino, diddle daddle on Instagram for about 40 minutes. Usually record a couple things on Instagram. and then start my day at about 11. If I'm not working, your bitch is a late riser. You feel me?
Yeah.
That's my morning.
Yeah, no, of course.
Yeah.
What would you tell your 18-year-old self?
I would tell my 18-year-old self, trust your gut, literally, trust your instincts, and the next 10 years is going to be the wildest ride of your life, but don't give up because you're going to get there. And that's the biggest thing. A lot of, you know, young comics will reach out to me and they're like, Heather, you're having success now. But again, everybody thinks it's an overnight thing. I've been in comedy for 15 years since I graduated college. Mm-hmm. And it literally has only taken off in the last 2 years. So I would tell any young person, you've got to stick with it, but you also got to pay your dues and you're going to go through some shit. But when you get to the other side, it's just going to be that much more richer and you're going to enjoy the success that much more.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.
Hi, Davide.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you for coming.
My pleasure.
Are you ready to answer some relationship questions?
Let's do it.
I love you.
Let's keep it professional.
Okay, here we go. I've been having a relationship conundrum for quite some time now and thought this would be a good way to get some headspace and an outside opinion. I've been juggling two guys for 8 months. Woohoo! One started very organically, but was also very sexual.
And the second one started because the first one.
basta.
Sorry.
One started very organically, but was and is also very sexual. Sometimes I wonder if he cares about the emotional aspect as much as I do. He makes me laugh. He makes me feel sexy. And I think he's the reason I am so much more confident, not only with myself as a person, but with my body. I haven't seen him since December, but that hasn't changed anything. We still talk all the time. The other is my ex-boyfriend who I started seeing again. We dated sophomore year of college. He broke up with me, then started kind of seeing each other again in the middle of semester junior year. And it's so much better this time around. He saw a therapist and truly worked on himself. And now is the man I wanted him to be when we were dating sophomore year. Neither of them know about the other. I know if I was in either of their positions, I would be devastated if someone was two-timing me. Granted, I'm not fully dating either of them, but I feel like I am emotionally cheating and getting caught in a web of lies. It's coming to the time where I think I need to choose one, but I'm terrified of making the wrong decision and losing the other one for good. Essentially, how do you choose between the nice guy who would take the bullet for you or the funny and exciting one that makes you feel like a sexual goddess? This might be a hard no, but there's so much more to the story. If you can talk on the phone about it, my cell phone is below. How cute she wants us to call her. Okay. How the hell? This is a complicated situation.
No, I would say you should not find yourself in need to make a decision.
Yeah.
Like that. Your potential, your ideal partner should be both. Should be a cool dude that you love spending time with and having sex with and make you laugh and make you feel sexy. And also should be somebody that gives you that
stability
and that make you feel safe. One advice that I would like to give to this person is that I honestly don't believe in people changing. I'm Italian. In Italy, you go to therapy only if you're a crazy person. You want to kill your mother. I'm trying to be sarcastic, but I'm saying I never believed on somebody coming back and saying, "Oh, I'm not the same person." We do more experience, so we grow, we evolve. We don't really change. This is my opinion, and it's not absolute. What I'm saying is, unless somebody's not suffering of this situation, unless you're not hurting nobody in this threesome or triangle, just I would not be concerned.
I grew up going to therapy my whole life and I very much believe in it and that it's very important for mental health.
Totally. I was joking before.
I know, but it is a cultural thing that you guys didn't have therapy growing up. And so I understand and respect that angle. I grew up being in therapy from the time I was very young and so I do understand not having a lot of tools in your toolbox and then being able to have access to those tools and it being
a game changer. That's a good point.
But I do agree with my husband in that, like, you don't have to make a decision. You should date both of them until one gets serious. And I mean, who knows what they're doing on the other
side. Maybe drop both of them because maybe You don't really want to.
Maybe you want to combo the two of them, and that's not even a thing.
Just think about it. If you are still seeing your ex, it's probably because this guy somehow is lacking on something. And the other way around, if you are still seeing him, it's because probably your ex doesn't give you that spark or that spicy, you know, touch that the other guy gives to you. So why don't you take your time?
Yeah, enjoy this.
And just think. You seem to be an analytical person. Like, think about it. You might arrive at the decision that dropping them both, it might be the best thing to do. And find a guy that may make you laugh and make you feel sexy and make you feel safe and make you feel great.
I think have fun. Keep it light.
Exactly.
Until it naturally grows into something. And if it doesn't on either end, then that's okay. Because clearly, yeah, you are getting a little bit of from each that you like. And maybe there's one other person.
In Italy, we say that a soup that had been warmed up, it doesn't taste that good. And we don't like soups. Italians are no soup people.
Yeah, but you and I broke up and got back together.
But that wasn't really warming it up, our soup.
Our soup was always warm.
The soup wasn't really done. We just, our relation, talking about that, that's a great example. At a certain point, we weren't ready for this. So we were living our relation, enjoying it any minute of it.
Which was awesome.
And when the time came, when the right time came, honestly, we jump on it. But
yeah, because we were like, together, but not, and we would see each other and enjoy it, but then like kind of do whatever we wanted. Because I remember thinking to myself, I don't think he's ready, and I'm not going to wait.
You weren't ready too, I think.
Yeah,
you
know? We were ready, but I wasn't going to like wait around. So, you know, I like went on dates and hung out with people and like did my thing. Okay. And so did Davide. And then it was
hypocritical saying the opposite, you know?
Okay, second question. I had been dating someone for a year and a half and we broke up right before Valentine's Day. I know, super ironic. When we were together, he was not giving it to me? He was not giving to me in ways that I...
Thank you.
That I wanted him to be, mainly because he never met my family and I only met a handful of his friends. Anyway, after the breakup, he expressed he wanted to be friends with me. I cannot fathom how to be friends with someone with whom I was a lover so quickly after breaking up with them. I know Valentine's Day was a while ago, but quarantine has me emotional. Us too. I told him I need time and have not contacted him in a few weeks. Without going into too much detail, how can I navigate this conundrum with grace, i.e. keeping boundaries and maintaining a connection with him without getting in my feelings again? Thank you in advance.
You should not even navigate that.
Yeah, Davide is going to tell you right now, there's no reason to be friends with anyone that you've slept with.
I'm the judge of, I never believed in friendship between ex-lovers or ex-boyfriends, ex-husband and wife, which is even more atrocious than that. Like, if we as individual, and again, this is my opinion, reach a point of intimacy and relation, far from a friendship concept, my opinion is that the best thing to do is to just move on. I can't be your friend after I loved you or I went too intimate with you. I can't just do it. It would not be sincere. But this is my opinion. This is the way I live all my relation. I never believe on that being a smart choice.
I was always friends with everyone that I dated. So when Davide and I got together, he was like, yeah, that's not going to work for me. Where before, like, I had always maintained those relationships and I liked that. It made me proud. It made me think that I was like an elevated person and could take the good things out of that relationship and hopefully, you know, have them like continue to serve my life in a beneficial way. But if this is something you're not used to and it's making you a little bit uncomfortable to the point where also like you haven't talked to him in a couple of weeks, like, what is this? Like, it doesn't seem like this guy's serving you in a way where you like need him in your life.
I mean, quarantine is tough.
I would get it if he was like so funny and you talked all the time, or he had great advice, or, you know, he would become.
Or you still had sex with him.
Yeah. Or you're still fucking, because that's cool too.
Exactly.
But like, if he just wants that and you're kind of whatever about it.
Yes, this is the oldest
trick in the book.
I can't be with you, but I want to be your friend. It's the oldest wolf trick of history of humanity.
I would just say, like, listen.
I would just say, fuck off and
no, you don't need to say
on.
Fuck off.
No, man, no.
She's asking how to do this gracefully.
I would say, just do what you're doing. If weeks have been gone without you guys talking, keep doing that.
The graceful move here would be to, and I'm going to say this because I've been Davide's ex-girlfriend and he was mean to me. So I'm going to say, if you want to be graceful about this, just very kindly have a conversation with him and just say that this is not a situation that you're used to and that you don't think that you can properly move on with your life if you're still tethered to someone that you've had a relationship with, and that you're so thankful for all of the time that you've had together and you're sorry that it didn't work out, that you wish him the best always, but that this is something that's just going to be better for you.
Yeah. Or if you don't feel like having that awkward 20 minutes call, they will start like, hi, how are you? Oh, I'm great. How are you? How's it going? Oh, great. How's your family? Oh, fantastic. How's the dog? Oh, that's great. Listen, I would like to, like, why? Like, just, if you want to avoid that,
she's,
he will understand
how to be graceful.
How I would do it, you don't need to be mean to somebody. What I believe is that you can slowly just make him understand that that's not what you're looking for.
I would take my advice on this one because it's the graceful option.
Okay, Pete. There's nothing graceful about breaking up with somebody and wanting to be friends, to me. This is my opinion. You know, also, here I come from, I'm Sicilian. My wife is from the opposite country, mindset-wise, like, the other side of the world.
Yeah.
You know, here I find myself, I mean, I had so many dinners with people that at the table were like group of people fucking each other. Being all this happy crew. And meanwhile, you're having two glasses of wine more than you were planning. And you're, oh, but you know, she was fantastic. Or like you picture her like having sex with her while you're at dinner with this, with her, his current partner. It's atrocious. I don't even know how you can do that. It's savage. Like the most gracious thing I can do to an ex is like, hi, how are you? Actually, we don't even ask how are you in Italy if you don't really care about the answer of that question. So we're like, hi. Buongiorno, buonasera. You know?
Well, thank you, Davide.
Thank you, guys.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes this week's episode of Everything is the Best. I hope you enjoyed it. Please rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff. Maybe leave a comment. But remember, shitty comments are for shitty people. Go ahead and follow me on Instagram at Pia Barangini. And I hope you have a fabulous, fabulous rest of your day. Love you. Ciao.